What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to Matt Goes to the Movies. We are once again here to talk about another Will Smith hit. And boy, it's just evident again when you look up some facts for this movies and box office. You know, this again, this was the time of Will Smith. You just could not escape him at the box office. Just unbelievable. But, you know, Rob Harrison, when this came out back in 2008, it was his fifth film to open on the July 4th weekend. It was his most successful opening to date. It was his eighth film in a row to take the top spot in the American and Canadian box office, and the 12th film in his career to lead the box office. So, like we talked about in the review of Men in Black, you know, this was just a time when he was unstoppable. Now, whether or not this movie is any good and we rate it the same as we have, which, Rob, I don't know if you know this. I'll kind of let you chime in here first. We have rated both the movies that we have reviewed for Will Smith here the same score, and Harrison has rated both of them the same score.
Yeah, I didn't actually realize that. I think this movie kind of caught some people off guard. If you think back to when this came out, I think the overall response critically and from a lot of audience was just kind of meh. You know, it's not a film that I think you'll find in a lot of people's libraries. It's not a film that you'll probably find a lot of people include in their top 10, probably not even in their top 10 Will Smith movies, honestly. And I think part of that is just, you know, this hype train was going, hit after hit after hit. This guy couldn't miss. And this film wasn't that. So I think it suffers a little bit from, you know, maybe expectations that it just wasn't going to live up to. This is really only the second time I've realistically seen it the whole way through. And I was very curious to go back, rewatch it, kind of with fresh eyes, just unique experience, and see how it actually is. So I'm excited to kind of talk about what I thought and what you guys thought.
Yeah, Harrison, what were your initial, before we get, you know, into spoilers and really break this thing down, what were, you know, your thoughts? Because this is one that you have or haven't seen.
I had not seen this. However, this is the movie that, like, I was most aware of, if that makes sense. Like, not that I wasn't aware of the others, but for some reason, this was a movie that has been recommended to me for a long time, way before The Basement Binge was even an idea in my brain. Like when I was in junior high and high school, or middle school, depending on what part of the state you're from, people had told me to watch Hancock, and I just never have. So it was one that, like, multiple times I've almost watched this movie and then just haven't. So, especially because one friend in particular, Kelton, who used to be on The Basement Binge with me, who recommended Edge of Tomorrow, which is a movie that I absolutely adore, and he also really likes. He was like the main, you know, driving force in recommending Hancock to me. So I was like, you know, he has good recommendations. And that's kind of what I had going in, was just that, like, for some reason, this was a popular movie that my group of friends when I was growing up really seemed to latch onto and to have discussions about, like, not just like, oh, it's the best movie ever, but like have really big, lengthy discussions about, and not just like fan reaction to, if that makes sense. So I don't really know what I was thinking, but I was excited to finally figure out what it was all about.
Yeah, I mean, if you know, you're going just off of the recommendation from the friend, I mean, you said it yourself, but I mean, you're smitten with Edge of Tomorrow. And I certainly, you know, I echo those statements. I think that was a vastly underrated movie when it first came out and got recognition over time. But yeah, I think this one was something that I was eager to get back to because I had certain thoughts on it, and I've grown to like some of the actors and actresses that are in this movie more over time. Jason Bateman being one of them is a guy that I think is hysterical. So I was excited to go back and see him in this. And certainly Charlize Theron has been in some things where she's kicked ass. So I was excited about this, but before we break this movie down, listeners of the show, we have another great giveaway that we are able to provide to our listeners thanks to Map360. And this is based on the movie Something is Wrong with the Children. It's a group of friends on a weekend camping trip begin to suspect something supernatural is at play when the kids behave strangely after disappearing into the woods overnight. There's Something Wrong with the Children is the latest horror film from Blumhouse Productions and is available to buy or rent on digital now. This film is not yet rated. However, following all of our social media channels and checking out the show notes, you will learn how you can win a free copy of that movie. So thank you to the listeners so we can give something a little back, and thank you to Map360. But Rob, as we break this down, I'll get to you first. You know, I think part of the reason why maybe this movie didn't, I mean, it's still very successful at the box office, especially for its time frame. Critics didn't really like it. It was definitely different than what we were getting from Will Smith. This definitely tried to take a more serious tone in certain aspects. Even getting an R rating twice and having to go back to get it down to a PG-13 rating. And I think that's part of the reason why, you know, there's a little bit of lower audience score compared to his previous movies that we've just reviewed. It is a shift in tone, especially coming off of like Men in Black, even for us, something that we just reviewed and watched.
You know, what really occurred to me is that what's the most quotable line from this movie? Can you think of one? Can you think of two?
I actually can, because my buddy actually texts me. One of the funny ones that one is when the woman's like, "You smell like booze," and I'm not going to say the word on air, but he's like, "Because I've been drinking." Like, I actually laugh hysterically at that.
And that's clever. But when you think about what you get from a Will Smith movie, you have like pages of quotable lines of things that you just are iconic to that movie. And there's that one, and there's maybe one or two other things, you know, he's like maybe something along the lines of like, "Call me crazy one more time." You know, that's used a little bit, but that's really not that. We've heard that in other movies. And that's, you know, it kind of stood out to me, like, that's really not what we get when we're used to a Will Smith movie, particularly Will Smith of this era. And I think what really kind of works against this movie in terms of how it's regarded, and again, it's just not the normal thing we got from him. But what occurs to me is that this is kind of a movie with an identity crisis. Is this a superhero deconstruction? Is this a raunchy comedy? Is this a comic book movie? Is this a redemption story? Is this an underdog story? Is this a love triangle story? Like, what actually is this movie? And does this identity crisis make it better or worse? And I think that's up to the viewer to decide. But I think for a lot of people that maybe had certain expectations when they sit down to watch this for the first time, particularly if you saw it in its time, there's a lot of things about this that might throw you off. You know, there's a lot of things about this movie. It really doesn't know what it wants to be. And by the way, like, that doesn't bother me, but I could see a lot of people that would be very confused by what this actually is. There's some things that, you know, I think really don't work. The camera whips around like crazy. It's almost filmed like a documentary and at times, and it whips around like crazy. It zooms in and out rapidly. It's somewhat distracting. There's some other things that don't really work. Like, I'm not really sure what the rules are per se in this world, like how the superhero abilities work and don't work, how Mary and John's connection works. And like, I think it at times there's like it seems like the way that it works fits whatever's going on in the story, as opposed to any like agreed upon rules that were figured out in advance, how this was supposed to work. So, you know, there's really some fun moments. Like, I enjoy this movie. I think it's better than its Rotten Tomatoes score. But there's definitely some weird parts too.
Yeah, Harrison, I'll let you piggyback off that. Because I have a lot of thoughts on what Rob just stated. But, you know, what are your thoughts on some of those comments, and, you know, some of your thoughts on this movie?
Yeah, from the get-go, the movie started, and I was like, what is this movie? Like, it starts with Will Smith being, like, this drunk superhero that, like, is horrible at being a superhero. Like, first, I didn't know it was a superhero movie. And then to start with, like, him being drunk and, like, normally Will Smith's character is, like, really charismatic and charming and, like, someone you want to root for and really enjoy, and he is not that at the beginning. Like, he's a jerk. And so it's weird to have the movie start that way. It's a very different vibe to a Will Smith movie. And then throughout the film, like, it starts with a different vibe, and then it kind of gets into the flow of it and gets moving and really moves along that, for example, the redemption story of this really awful drunk superhero and his redemption arc. And once it gets going into that and you're kind of in lane with it, it switches and goes another direction with, like, this weird love triangle thing. And then once it goes into that vibe a little bit, and, like, this that mixed into this redemption story and, like, this history, we've been around for everything, then it switches gears again to, like, this we're not meant to be together, but we are meant to be together, so I'm going to be a hero because we're not together, but we are. And, like, every single time it gets into a groove, it does something else. Mingled in that is this weird, like, wannabe action superhero movie that it's not being, and the camera work is weird. It's like it can't figure out what it's trying to do. It's trying to do too many things. And there's some of the things in here that I actually really, really like, and I wish there was more of. And there's other things that I'm like, this just ruins it. And so it's just like this weird back and forth between good and not good. And it's hard to keep up with tonally.
Yeah, to me, this movie is like heating a burrito in the microwave. You get hot and cold pockets of it. It doesn't heat evenly.
That is so accurate.
Like, that's, you know, to me, that's how this thing breaks down. And it's a shame, because the parts of the meal that are hot are actually really good. But you guys said it super succinct that it just doesn't know what it wants to do. And when it hits a stride, you know, like, you start, like, if you're on the jump rope and you start going, well, then you just nick the bottom of your shoe and you got to go again. And it just starts and stops so many times, which is a shame, because I think there's some really good things in there. And, you know, you could have almost said, okay, well, if it would have went all the way with, like, a dark kind of, like, redemption story of seeing him more as, like, a drunk or a guy that, you know, hurts people inadvertently because he doesn't have his stuff together, you know, that could have been a more free-flowing movie. Or they could have just went all out comedy with this, and maybe just having that all flow, that would have made it a better movie. But I do like the performances. I think the performances in this are good, but it is just such a different vehicle for Will Smith in terms of what, in this time frame, fans were used to seeing. He also creates Michael Myers. That kid that he punches into the sky is actually Michael Myers. Actually, the young version of Michael Myers in Rob Zombie's Halloween. So he created a serial killer. So, but yeah, it's really weird, because you do have, you know, that story of them, you know, Will Smith and Charlize Theron's character being together, but, you know, just like the other gods, when they get together and decide that they want to live a normal life, their immortality goes away. I think that's an interesting concept. But Rob, you mentioned it when you first started going over your thoughts. They play really loose with how that actually works about them being close together. It's like it's overdone when they need it to be done and act like they're in danger. And then it's like, well, it's kind of taking a break for a second so he can do what he needs to do to save her towards the end. It just, there's no consistency with how close they are together in relation to how much damage they take.
Yeah, it really doesn't follow anything specific. Like, if you go back and what's interesting is this is definitely the first time I've watched this movie all the way through since I saw it originally. And what was really interesting to me was really keen on Charlize Theron's performance and the way that she regarded Hancock. There was, it's much more interesting the second time through, because initially you're not really sure why she's so, I mean, obviously Hancock being kind of a jerk and being a drunk. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You don't necessarily want that around, but it was a very, very different experience the second time through, which was really kind of interesting. So if you're listening to this and you've seen this movie once, maybe you've seen it twice, haven't seen it in a while, go back and rewatch it just for that. And partly is just because Charlize is just, I mean, she's among the most talented actresses that's working right now. I mean, she's in that conversation. She is just fantastic in everything I've ever seen her in. And I'm a big fan of hers, and her work in general. But it just never really seems to line up. You can't really make sense heads or tails of what's actually going on and why. And, you know, she does a great job with it, but then all of a sudden, you know, he gets stabbed. So then she's feeling it. It's like, how far away does he actually have to get? Is it like diminishing, or is there like an actual zone? Like, how's that work? And I think that part is, you know, that's the climax of your movie. Mm-hmm. Is that whole scene in the hospital at the end. And I know we're kind of jumping all the way to the end, but that's the climax. That's where you're supposed to have this big emotional response from your audience. And when your big emotional response is confusion, you have failed as a movie.
Yeah, Harrison, I'll let you chime in.
Yeah, it was when Charlize's character showed up, I was just like immediately like, what is this movie doing? Like, I immediately got the vibes that they had a relationship in some way, but I was like, wait, what? Like, does he not recognize her, or does he, and he's just not saying anything? Like, obviously you're slowly putting the pieces together, but I just knew something was going to happen between the two of them, and a relationship was going to be either a previous one or they were going to have one. And but I just was like, what? That was when we were firmly in like the redemption arc section of the movie, which is actually probably my favorite part of the movie. I thought that was exceptional. In fact, I have a line here that was just when he's in prison and I forget the guy's name, the main guy, not
Jason Bateman's character.
Yes. Ray. That's his name. He says, stop pretending that you don't care. You have a calling. You're a hero, Hancock. You're going to be miserable the rest of your life until you accept that. Trust me. Trust this process, this plan. Just stay in here. When they call, a hero is what we're going to give them. And then he goes and saves the people. And it's like a phenomenal scene. And I'm like, wow, this movie's awesome. And I was like really into it. And I was ready to come on and say like, why have I never seen this movie? This is an exceptional movie. I love the story. This is really impactful. This performance from Will Smith is really good. Blah, 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 blah. And then that stuff came in more and more and more and more. Or maybe I'm getting my timelines messed up. And it was before. But either way, I'm like enjoying this redemption arc thing. And suddenly this love triangle thing is happening. And I just was like, what is this movie trying to do? Because you had me hooked and you're losing me. And I'm not liking this at all. And it I was confused in what the overall motive of the story was, which is not good. Like, it's weird that you can like have these really good moments that you really believe in and enjoy, but then just think like, what do you want to achieve? Because I don't know what you want. And so I don't know what I want. And it's just weird.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that I didn't like about the love triangle story, so to speak. And like, realistically, I think that scene where they're fighting and then where conveniently they land in front of Ray, of course they do, in front of his building. But I did like the scene where she's just like screaming at him like, I hate you, and he's like, I'm sorry, like whatever I did, I'm sorry. I'm like, okay, that works. But at the same time, I'm like, I really like Jason Bateman's character Ray, who's like genuinely a good guy who wants to help people, and he's kind of caught in this, and I'm like, I just feel bad for him. Like, I don't feel anything like, oh, it's so sad that like he lost his memory getting jumped when they were on a date. Like, I don't feel bad about that. Like, I feel bad for this guy who's like this really nice dude. And it's like, okay. And I don't think that's what they were trying. At least that's not what I would go for in this movie. Like, fine. Have her character still have superpowers and show that at the end as a teaser. Like, but just have this be a redemption story for Hancock's character and, you know, the bank robber that tries to get revenge on him, you could still have this movie be that without jumping all over the place.
Maybe it's just me, but I'm kind of over amnesia as a plot device just in general. And perhaps mm-hmm. it's just because I played a lot of JRPGs growing up as a, you know, being born in the early 80s and playing video games all through the 90s. And, you know, that seemed like the plot of most of those. At some point or another, somebody had amnesia, but it's kind of overused. And I don't know. I guess it sort of works for this movie, but imagine if that wasn't how it started. Imagine there was, I don't know, 75 other ways they could have done it without the amnesia plot. How much more interesting could this have been?
Rob, I just flicked myself in the head. I don't remember. Do you want to start this episode over?
Yes. Like, it's just amnesia doesn't really work that way. Like, it's, I don't know. I'm kind of over it as a plot device in general.
It's interesting to me because, like, to go back to Matt's comment, that scene when they fight and they land in front of Ray, it's just like this weird combination of emotions where, like, you are just sad for Ray. So, like, you're immediately just disinterested in everything that's going on. And while I think that the performance that Will Smith gives when he says, I'm sorry, I think this idea that, like, he doesn't remember his previous life is weird. Like, the thing that I do like about it, because I'm with you, Rob, that amnesia is a wasted plot device. The thing that I do like is when he says, like, who was I that no one was there to claim me? Or whatever he says. I forget the line.
Yeah.
Like, that is good motivation for a character who needs redemption. Like, I can get that. I'm buying into that line and the way that it adds to the thematic weight of redemption and the journey that he goes on. However, the amnesia thing to then go on to what Charlize Theron's character and that whole weird thing, and then to later just have it revealed, the whole thing, like, I would have rather just had it stayed a mystery that he just didn't know and we didn't know, and that was it, and he just had to come to terms with not knowing. I feel like that could have been a more impactful use of amnesia, because that, to me, that was when it would be interesting, is learning to live with a version of yourself you have to define for yourself who you are, because that's a relatable experience for me. And just flat out forgetting and then being told, like, oh yeah, here you go, this was your life. Like, that, who does that?
Yeah, Matt, you kind of referenced it, but I mean, think how many times we see people get concussions all the time in the NFL, in boxing, in mixed martial arts. Like, none of those guys have ever gone under the blue tent and forgotten the playbook, like, let alone their entire life. Like, we've seen, just even this season, we've seen guys get hit so hard that you're convinced, like, there's no way he's ever getting up off that field, and they're back in action the next week. I don't know. I'm just kind of over amnesia in general, I guess.
Yeah, and, you know, sticking with the theme of this kind of going back and forth, you get that scene where, you know, Ray sees them, and you feel sad for Ray, but then it kind of switches tones where they all get back to the house. And part of that's actually kind of funny. Like, Ray has no clue what's going on. He's like, why were you flying? Tell me why you were flying. And then he's talking to Hancock. And, like, the way Will Smith, like, delivers the line, he's like, don't bring it over here, Ray. Like, you know, talk to her. It's funny. But then at the same time, I'm like, this shouldn't be funny right now. Like, so totally, yeah. Again, they just shift, and it's like, yes, it's funny, but even though I'm laughing because there's some genuinely funny dialogue in there, I feel like I shouldn't be laughing. Like, this is not what I should be following up with based on what I just saw. And again, that's where it just, it flip-flops back and forth so much that even though you might be having somewhat of a good time or laughing, I could not stop thinking about the fact of, like, this isn't the natural follow-up for what we just saw.
Yeah, it's weird because I agree with you. Like, that scene is funny, and the writing of it is clever, and, like, the progression of it between the characters makes sense, and it like, but it doesn't fit. It fits and doesn't. You know what I mean? Like, and it's just this weird in between, and it makes me not sure how I feel about any of it, and so it just, like, It makes me lukewarm to the entire thing, which is like, I'd rather have an opinion than have no opinion. And I'm like struggling to express how I feel because I'm like, yeah, it's funny and it works, but it doesn't and it shouldn't be there. It's just this weird combination. However, while we're speaking about funny things, I have been kicking myself since we recorded the Men in Black episode because I did not mention the scene where Will Smith is taking the test with the papers. That is the funniest scene ever. I'd never seen that. I was dying laughing. I had to pause it. I could not compose myself. And I just am mad I never mentioned that. So I just had to say it, get off my chest. But back to Hancock, it's
better now, Harrison.
I do. Yeah. I like feel I'm like glad. I can breathe.
Thank you for sharing.
Yeah. Thank you for listening. I appreciate it. But it's weird because I wrote this down in my notes. At first, this is what I said. I didn't like the whole wife thing at first, but then the conversation between the three of them, it got better. But then the next paragraph says, but the ending was weird. I don't like any of it. It like ruined the whole thing. So it's just like this weird back and forth where I'm continuing like, oh, hey, here's this thing. I kind of like it. But then something else happens, which makes me unlike it. So then I don't know.
What's weird about some of that is the way that Mary holds Hancock accountable for the person he's not anymore and doesn't remember being. She's angry at him for something that, you know, for all intents and purposes, he's not that person right now. And, you know, she's angry at him for that. And it kind of doesn't make sense. And I guess the thing that I find really compelling is thinking about what a relationship that spans centuries would really be like. You know, we all know people have been married a long time and, you know, they know their spouse better than, you know, anybody ever could know somebody at times. But to have a relationship grow over millennia, even, is kind of an interesting idea. Like how would that be different? And I think that's an idea that's kind of hinted at times. It's sort of talked about, but I don't know that it explores as much as I kind of wish it would.
Rob, I with what you're speaking about, as the movie was going, I felt the exact same thing, which actually, Rob, have you seen Eternals yet?
No, I'll get around to it.
Don't get Maybe. Around to it. It's not worth okay. it. But I had the exact same, like, I was like, this is what I felt like in Eternals, because Eternals has a similar thing where, you know, they live forever and there's relationships that span eons, and it's just weird. Like that relationship should be so much different than it is. And I also think that we just don't have the capacity to understand what it really would be like. However, it doesn't feel the way that it should. I don't know how to describe what it should feel like. It just doesn't feel like it should.
Well, I think part of that for me is the fact that even watching the movie, it still doesn't, like, okay, she hates him, you know, for whatever. I mean, the guy's been gone for eight, like, he hasn't bothered you for 80 years because he has no clue. And he still really hasn't bothered you when he first came back. Like, he wasn't, it's not like it was just some guy that came into their house and he just started hitting on her. Like, he really didn't. Like, nothing was going on there. And even watching the scene, there was, and I know they kind of make mention to, like, oh, we're just drawn to each other, but they don't mention anything about being, like, physically or emotionally drawn to each other. I think you're just supposed to get that conclusion, but it's like, I just didn't believe where the lead up to him kissing her. Like, to me, that felt very forced. And then, you know, they get into the fight because she throws him through, you know, she throws him through the wall. I didn't believe all of it. And I feel like, you know, especially with the rules, how we talked about when they can get hurt and when they can't, I felt like they never really explained, like, the connection that they're supposed to have to each other and being drawn. That didn't feel real either. It felt like painted on, so to speak.
To me, it felt like Mary, is that her name? Charlize Theron's character?
Yes.
Was doing more to bring it on and to bring it about than yes. anything else, which I don't really feel like she was doing, but I felt like that was the explanation my mind was coming up with. Like, okay, maybe let me rephrase that. that is a believable explanation that that's how it came about, that that's what she was doing, that she was bringing it about. But why would she bring that about? It's just, it's weird. It doesn't make sense. It's like my mind is trying to fill in the hole, and and I'm just like trying to get the piece that fits as good as it can, and no piece really fits the way it should. And it just makes, again, the whole thing is just very weird.
And I think there's even some Uncle Ben stuff here too. You know, the whole with great power comes great responsibility. So he has this ability. He's a superhero in air quotes there, you know, cause he kind of sucks at it, you know, like he causes more harm than what he does in terms of help. And she's just there on the sideline watching all this happen, watching all of the collateral damage that he's causing and lives that are likely being lost. And she willingly chooses to sit on the sideline and just let it happen instead of, you know, step in and say, she doesn't even have to explain the whole thing. She doesn't have to tell him that they were married or that they were lovers or anything like that. But just to even serve as a mentor and teach him, you know, how to do what he does and give him purpose in life that isn't just being a drunk all the time and not caring and actually using his abilities for good. Mary's kind of a terrible person.
I thought the same thing. And I also thought, like, what was her game plan? Like, if they never age, I mean, was she just...
At some point, she's going to, like, get noticed.
Yeah, he's going to... They're going to be together, what, like, 10 years? And he's going to be like, why do you look the exact same? Yeah, like what was her plan? I don't know. Like, to be like, oh, 10 years later, hey, by the way, here's this thing I never told you. It just, the entire thing about her character is just weird.
Yeah, she's never going to get sick. She's never going to accidentally cut herself. Like, she's, you know, she'll never drop something on her foot and have it like actually impact her. Like, we have a joke in my house that we need one of those like OSHA signs. This facility has gone, you know, X many number of days since my wife last hurt herself. Like, she does it all the time. Like, that would be weird to me if like all this stuff happened, like, you know, crack your head off the bottom of a kitchen cabinet and not even react, or have the cabinet break off. Like, at some point you'd go, what?
Right. You would think that in that entire time, like, okay, she's been doing it for centuries, but you would think that maybe just because part of it, she does seem happy.
Oh yeah.
With Ray. Like, you know, they seem
that does
like
seem real. Yeah.
You know, a real legitimate couple. You would think in that she would slip up, like her natural guard to be like, I got to make sure I don't bump into anything too tough, or, you know, I have to react a certain way. Like, again, like if she did drop something on her foot, I have to act like it affected me. Like it hurt. You would think that just in that natural relationship where they do seem like a couple, he would have noticed something. Like,
yeah.
There's a couple of weird signs here.
It would have slipped through.
Right. Exactly. Now, you know, when we were talking about like Hancock just being a horrible hero, there was a couple of fun, you know, that scene where he does save Ray from the train and Ray gets out of the car and they're all yelling and they're like, you could have gone right up with the car, but instead you, and like, you know, Ray's like, yeah, he could have, like, you should have gone up. Like, yeah, you could have shown, you should have flown the car straight up, but he didn't, but I'm happy to be alive. I get to go home to my wife. Again, like there's some funny scenes here, and I love Jason Bateman. Like, I think he's great. But then, yeah, it's just that tonal flip. You can't ever enjoy one aspect of the movie because then you're trying to figure out the next aspect of the movie. And that's the thing that like always sticks with me. And even when I was thinking about how I wanted to rate this, was, Rob, you said, especially the ending, when your climax is confusion, you probably shouldn't be doing it. Because it's not good confusion. It's not Shutter Island confusion about, does he know what's real? Is like, I don't know. Sorry, spoiler, if neither of you guys have seen Shutter Island. but it's,
no, that's,
it's not
a good ending. You're right.
Yeah, like it's not that type of confusion for the audience where you can make either play to what you think that ending means. And you can be right.
The weird thing, especially about this ending, is that like it tries to end on like this really like, I'm just going to say like sweeping, soaring feeling with Hancock flying through the air. And it's just like, I just feel flat. Like I almost don't know what I'm feeling right now. And that combined with the imagery makes it worse.
And I think, too, is because there's not, you know, the villain in here is very forgettable.
Oh, yeah.
He's lame.
You know, he shouldn't be threatening to Hancock, but because of this MacGuffin of them being close together, he is. And it's just like, that's why also for me, this ending doesn't, it doesn't work. It because this villain should not have done anything to either of them. This is not believable.
So this, I've got two major problems with our villain Red. When he's in the bank, when Hancock runs into him the first time and he ends up losing his first hand, you know, he's screaming, "Where'd he go? What is happening?" Like, that is unbelievably lame and terrible and stupid.
So bad.
It's awful. Like, it should have been cut and everybody involved should have been fired. when they go to break out of prison, they have absolutely no way of knowing that Hancock is in a vulnerable state. Like, he's not in a vulnerable state at that point, but they have no way of knowing. What was their end game? Like, what was their plan? What were they hoping to do to him? It makes no sense. Like, they were just going to show up and try to stab him and throw fire extinguishers at him. Like, why did they think that was going to work? There's no reason for them to know that. And you kind of take this towards the beginning of the movie. The very first action scene we get, like, Hancock is a known entity. It's not like he's a new hero on the scene. Everybody knows who this guy is, and yet everybody still tries to shoot him. Like, what are you hoping to accomplish? Like, it's futile, and everybody does it anyways. It makes no sense. I mean, he's pretty much got the same power set as Superman, really, without, like, the laser vision and the freeze breath and stuff. But it kind of, at times it's made Superman kind of a boring hero. So, like, the writers will have to, you know, put other people around him in danger or make his secret identity part of the tension until they eventually just had him reveal it recently. So it kind of makes him a little bit of a boring, but at the same time, like, why are you wasting your ammo on him? Like, there's so many other things you could possibly be doing. It just seems stupid. And it's, I don't know. I hate it.
The thing that I keep thinking about, and I don't know how this really fits in with what you guys are saying, but it's what you guys are making me think. I was recently listening to the episode that Matt, you did on Black Adam, and I feel like there are components of this that like Black Adam could have really worked with this type of redemption story that the first movie did, or the first part of the movie did. Because, like, I'm thinking about, because Rob, you were describing that scene at the bank, like, after you get that stupidity where the guy is trying to negotiate with him and he says, like, "You're gonna take the money and you're gonna carry me to safety or I'm gonna blow up these people," or whatever, and like, I was genuinely thinking, like, oh, Hancock's kind of turning over a new leaf. What is he gonna do? How is he gonna get through this situation? Like, and then he does, like, this really kind of, like, morally gray thing that, you know, to quote the horrible line at the ending of Black Adam, he can do things that you can't because of who he is, or whatever the stupid line is. Like,
oh my God, that was horrendous.
Right. But that idea could work with the direction that this first part of the movie goes to, with, like, this redemption arc. And it could have, like, that idea might have been cool, or that they take this idea in the first part of Hancock and put in Black Adam. Either way, I feel like my brain keeps wanting that, but sadly, as Rob pointed out, we keep getting stupidity, like, not just in the writing, but just in, like, every aspect of this film, that the characters' choices, logically, just, it's like, are we dumb? Do you think that we as audience members are dumb? I don't know. Like, it's just like, here's the thing that I kept thinking. Nobody likes Hancock. Does he just not have to eat? Like, where does he get this money? Like, he apparently has plenty of money for alcohol, but where does he get that? Like, does he panhandle on his time off when he's not saving the world? Like, I don't know. There's just, like, a lot of logical things that the movie just kind of expects you to go along with and never question. And those are, like, minor things, like people shooting at him, and then there are also major plot points, like pretty much everything happening with Charlize Theron's character. And it just, like, is like, oh, here you go, just accept this, don't question it, because if you do, it's gonna fall apart.
Yeah, I still think, too, the ending is, I mean, besides the giant heart on the moon,
That was, how did he do that? Just how did he do that? I don't.
You know, movie magic. It's that Bruce Almighty moon. but I still think there's, it's a tough pill to swallow that Rey and Mary are still together. And as happy as they seem at the end of it. Like, I feel like, you know, okay, you were going to, if this guy, if Hancock hadn't shown up the way that he had, because realistically, it's kind of like dumb luck that he falls into their lives. But you were going to lie to me for our entire life. Like, you were lying to me for our entire lives, and granted, it's not like, you know, she was lying about cheating or anything, but, like, you've lied her entire lives, and realistically, like you said, how is she going to get out of this relationship? Like, was she just, when he started questioning, was she just going to up and leave and be like, well, I can't stick around for another 10 years because I'm going to look the same as the first day we met, and what am I going to tell him? Like, Were you eventually going to tell him? Were you just going to fly off in the night one night? Like, how did you expect to, like, realistically stay with this guy?
You're 100% right that at the end of the movie, when they're still together and they're just the loving couple, I got weirded out by that. I was like, I'm not buying this right now.
Yeah, because it's not like we, you know, did you guys, like, legitimately, like, did you go to couples therapy and, like, hash this out and talk about it? But no, it's like, okay, they get shot, Hancock leaves, all right, whatever. Like, none of what just happened existed. Again, it's like a tonal shift. Like, it's like the argument and the fights, like, didn't happen.
And is she just going back to life as a housewife? She's got these abilities. People know she has these abilities, and she's willingly choosing, it seems, to not use them,
yeah,
for the greater good. I, you know, again, it's the whole great power, great responsibility. To what extent is a person with the means to do so required to benefit the greater good? It's a fantastic philosophical debate that you can have with your friends. But it seems kind of weird.
The thing is that a whole ending prevents you from being, like, excited or happy or pleased with any part of it. Because, like, Hancock has had this great character growth, but he's still alone. Like, cool. He's a better hero now, but he got a hawk.
And what's weird to me is at no point does Mary ever be like, oh, yeah, by the way, your real name is whatever.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. He never even tells him.
Your real name is David Webb.
I was totally expecting you to say Ralph Boner.
he got us again. He swerved us.
That wily Ralph Boner.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. You don't know, you don't know how to feel at the end of this movie, but yet I still sit there and go, Harrison, you said this. I don't hate it. I don't love it. I still don't know what my opinion is of it.
Yeah.
And that's worse.
Here's the thing. This is how I'll put it. And here's another note I have down. From the beginning of the movie, something felt off. I think this movie is filmed in a weird aspect ratio where, like, it's extra long horizontally and shorter vertically. I don't know. I should go and compare. But the entire time, I kept, like, trying to, like, reach my head forward, like, through the window, because I felt like I wasn't getting the full view, that it was being obstructed by the letterboxing. And I just feel, I genuinely really think that the aspect ratio is different than most movies. Like, I feel like our brains have watched enough movies in, like, 16:9 format. We're accustomed to what it looks like. And so when it's slightly off, you notice. And that accompanied with, like, this really tight, shallow depth of field cinematography that it has, and how it's weird camera work. So just from the get-go, visually, it feels off, and you're like, but you're not quite sure. You can't really put your finger on if it is or if it isn't. So you just kind of, like, leave it there. Like, I think it's there, but I don't know if it is. And so I'm like this weird in between. That is the entire thing of the movie, is, like, there's parts of it you're like, oh, hey, see, there's proof as to why it doesn't work. Or maybe another moment you're like, oh, there's proof as to why it does. But I'm not really sure if it does or doesn't, because, like, if we're doing a scientific theory, we're doing the scientific method and we're doing our research, you know, our hypothesis can't be answered because we've got proof that goes either way. So we're just like stuck in between. And it's a bummer because I will say, I'll say this again, this movie started and that whole redemption arc thing and the performance of Will Smith and Ray's character, that I was really into. I really, really loved it. I wrote down that whole line when he's in the prison. And he convinces him to say, I thought it was exceptionally good. And I wrote, this is not, quote, this is what I said in my notes, this is not at all what I thought it was, and this is really good. And then I just started trashing it. so it's just a bummer.
Yeah, Rob, any, you know, any kind of sort of final thoughts on notes that you took?
You know, Harrison was talking a little bit about the aspect ratios and just some of the camera work in general. I found a lot of the camera work to kind of be distracting. It was almost shot like ER at times, you know, like just again, it zooms in and out and the camera is very shaky at times. It's distracting. Like when you notice it, when you notice that, you remember you're watching a movie. And when you remember you're watching a movie, you stop having fun. But right out of the gate, the visual effects in this are pretty bad. And that's even by 2008 standards. Right out of the gate, you notice it. The other thing that I'll mention right at the beginning of this movie, if you are going to use a Ludacris song, do not ever use the edited version. If you're intending, if you have to hit PG-13 or PG or whatever it is, don't use Ludacris. Just please don't make me listen to Move without actually giving me the whole song. Like, that's distracting to me. When I know every word to that song and you're using the edited version, that's incredibly distracting to me. And it bothers me because I love that song. To pick something different.
It's almost like they didn't have time to go back because, again, it was, they went through the review board twice with Rated R. And it was almost like, it's almost like they said, well, we don't have time to get a different song. So just use it, like, go cut.
Yeah, it feels like that project that you did in high school when you wanted to use a song and you had to cut it out because it was a high school project. And so you just like went into Windows Movie Maker and you just like scissor, drag together. Perfect.
And print.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, because Rob said that he also noticed it, I looked it up, and it is filmed in 23 It is filmed at approximately 240:1 aspect ratio, but I found it, and it's actually filmed at 239. So just from 240 to 239 is so different. And it, who made that choice? Like, I mean, it's not like they were shipping cameras that shoot like a 0.01 different aspect ratio. Like, I feel like that had to be a creative decision. And who made that decision? Because it's an awful one. Like, if you're going to change it, like, make it like 225 or something. I don't know. Like, just, I don't, yeah. Anyway, rant over. It's just dumb.
Yeah. No, I think those are valid points. Let's rate this thing. Let's get into popcorn time. I'm going to let Rob go first. Cause I'm curious as to what your guys' ratings are. Cause I think you might be surprised at mine based on everything that we've said.
So, all right, I'm going to go first and I'm just going to go ahead and go out on a limb here. When we started this, I said, you know, it's sitting right around like 49% on Rotten Tomatoes and it's better than that score. And then I only said like negative things about it. So it kind of seems like I'm contradicting myself. So I am at 3 buckets on this. And that's maybe being a little bit generous. And I think it's mostly just because like what Harrison was mentioning, this movie starts off with so much promise and then it just kind of gets weirder and choppy from there. But when I think about this movie, I tend to remember more of the parts of it that I liked, and I sort of excuse some of the parts I don't like. And that's really on the basis of the performances of some pretty talented actors, Will Smith, Charlize Theron, Jason Bateman. This is maybe Jason Bateman's most serious role that I can remember. And he's still playing a comedic character, but this is probably the most serious role I've seen him in. And he's incredibly effective at it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with 3 buckets, and that's going to maybe sound like a surprise.
So Harrison, I'll let you go last and bookend it. I was three buckets as well. And it is because of the fact that when you sit there and you look at this movie and the things that I'm like, I like that. There's so much potential in there that I tend to look at it a little bit more favorably than the negative things that we said about it, because I'm just like, all right, besides the villain, the negatives don't make me sit there and go, well, I don't like this movie, I'm going to go do something else. Like, I still gave my undivided attention to this movie, and I sit there and go, man, if there was a little tweak here, one tweak there, just a smidge difference there, boy, we've really got something. And so that's why I give it three. I think the overall, the good outweighs the bad, which again, you like Rob, like you said, it might seem odd to say that because it seemed like we did just mention, you know, the bad about this movie. But I mention it because of the fact that it's weird, especially coming off of Men in Black, Independence Day, that the tonal shift, and because you can see it, you can see the potential in this movie.
I'll tell you what's interesting is that when you think about other things, Matt, that you and I have rated three buckets, or when we were doing it with Reels, it's sort of a range, right? So if you take everything I've ever given three out of five to, this is probably at the lower end of my threes. Like, if I took every movie I've ever given a three to, this is probably in the lower half of those threes for me. But I still stand by three.
Yeah.
Well, our ratings are consistent, as I will be one bucket less at two. I give it two buckets. And the reason that it's not zero buckets is because of that first part of the movie. I really, you know, it had me in the first half and it just let me down everything else. I it's sad because I had never seen this movie before. For some reason, it felt like it was culturally popular and important when I was growing up, and I was never part of it. And so I was excited to finally, now that I'm, you know, decades older, become a part of that. And it started and I was like, wow, this is exceptional. This is really, really good. I understand why people are talking about this. This is cool. It's different. It's kind of aggressive in the way that it comes at you with its difference. And then I like the direction that it moves. And that is 100% what I was thinking about it. And I really enjoyed it. And then it totally switched up on me and I didn't really like anything else that followed. And the action even became increasingly generic, and everything that I liked about it just was taken away from. So those two buckets are for like the first part of the movie up until the point where he stops the bank heist. And then like in my brain, I just need a way for him to like end the movie there. And then we'll just forget the rest half, because that first part, I like, if it was just that part of the movie, I'd be five buckets all the way in, like five big buckets, but everything else takes it away. Sadly.
Yeah. Certainly the lowest rated movie that we've done so far. I don't think it will be by the end of this the lowest rated movie that we have, but could
Matt,
be surprised.
You don't like I Am Legend?
That's exactly what I'm saying. Spoiler alert. You know, one thing too before we close this out. You know, as you know, early back or as close as 2020, Charlize Theron did say that she would be interested in a sequel to this movie, because there was major talks about it, and it just continued to stall out. They had hired scriptwriters, but you know, she said that she would have liked to have explored, you know, this universe, and they had ideas for it. Will Smith said the same thing, and you know, for everything that does get a sequel, I am really surprised. You know, even though the ratings weren't great, again, $628 million back in 2008, it made it the fourth highest grossing movie at that time. Movies like that get sequels every day, so I was surprised that this did not get one.
That's true. Yeah, wow, this was really financially successful.
So $150 million budget.
Dang.
So
if there was ever a time to re-explore this and put out a sequel of some kind, I'd watch it. I would. I think there's enough intrigue in some of the things they could do. You know, I'd love to see. Would Hancock and Mary be able to stay away from each other? Is there something to that connection where they're just drawn like magnets and they can't help themselves but be together? And what would that really look like? You know, because it does seem like Mary truly does care for Ray. So that could be compelling in a sequel if we ever got one. But I think at this point, it's safe to say that ship has sailed. Although they waited, like, what, 15 years in between Matrix movies? So, you know, how long did they wait between Jurassic Park and Jurassic World? So I guess maybe I will never say never.
Zombieland, Bill and Ted, Dumb and Dumber. Like, there's been some huge gaps in between, you know, sequels, but I think the thing that really works against this one is obviously everything that's going on with Will Smith right now. And, I think if this were to be a sequel, this would have to be one of those. It's a Netflix, a Paramount Plus. It's one that was created by one of those studios to come out on streaming.
Yeah. Yeah. As streaming services fight for, I don't want to say relevancy, but to have exclusive content that people need to subscribe to their service specifically to get, you could see that if there was enough. I mean, Netflix has certainly bought the rights to shows that were being canceled by other people.
Lucifer.
Yeah. I mean, think how many years it was between Indiana Jones, The Last Crusade and the upcoming movie. I mean, it's been
years.
How many? I mean, 35 years, because nothing happened in between that we acknowledge the existence of.
Literally.
I mean, hey, they could do it. Matt just had a review that I was listening to, Puss in Boots, The Last Wish, like 11 years later, I just released an episode on it. So, you know, it can happen. And maybe that time is what people need to get new ideas, because here's the interesting thing that I say. I don't know how successful a sequel would be, and I don't know if this is going to make sense to anybody but me and the way my brain's thinking about it, but this is always interesting for me to look at on Letterboxd. So you can see like the overall average rating for Letterboxd and also how many fans how many fans the movie has. And a fan is just considered somebody who puts this movie in their top four on their profile. And so like the movies that we were reviewing, Men in Black and Independence Day, Men in Black is 3.6, Independence Day is 3.3, I'm Legend 3.3, you know, like all within that three range. Hancock's at 2.7, not far off. You know, a lot of 3-star ratings, only has 43 fans. Men in Black, I Am Legend, and Independence Day all have in the 500s to 600s. Like, I don't know what you want to do with that data, but I feel like this is a movie that has been forgotten to some extent. Like, it was successful, but I don't see people talking about it anymore, and I wonder. Yeah, well, we're not paying for the movie, the sequel, but I'm just curious, like, how relevant it could be if it were to come back, or if people would be like, oh, yeah, that was a thing, and then just, like, never watch it.
Yeah, great point.
So, but who knows? There's a reason that I'm not a producer in Hollywood.
Could be, but who knows? Who knows? Maybe we pitch it. this is our first pitch to Hollywood, is the sequel to Hancock. All right. Well, that will do it for our review of Hancock. Certainly, a surprise. I was surprised rewatching this and going, oh, it's definitely not what I remember. Cause I did remember liking this movie when I first saw it. So I was surprised to go back, watch it and have the feelings that I did about it. But you know, I still enjoyed the fact that I got to re-see it and, you know, formulate the opinion that I now have on it. So, Rob, we have got a couple more things coming up here for the month of January. I'll let you talk about that. And then, Harrison, for listeners, I will let you, because, boy, you've got a pipeline coming up for the basement bench. So, Rob, tell listeners what we've got still coming in January.
lots of great stuff coming in January. We continue on with our Will Smith marathon. We've got I Am Legend coming out, which I'm very excited to go back and revisit because I think there's a lot of great stuff there. For those of you who are into post-apocalyptic kinds of adventures, we will continue to review The Last of Us. And I want to welcome any listeners who are checking this episode out after our initial breakdown from the launch episode on the 15th. That show is going to, it's drawing buzz like I can't even begin to describe. It's everywhere. Everybody you know is talking about this. Every place that you read news or entertainment information, people are talking about this show. So it's on HBO Max. Highly encourage it. It's my favorite video game of all time, and I'm very excited about what's going to happen. Love being able to break that down. So if you are joining us after checking that out for the first time, want to say welcome, and I'd invite you to check out the rest of the content up and down the channel. But we have breakdowns coming out, should be available every Monday morning. We're going to record Sunday night immediately after the episode. You'll be able to listen to it on your way to school or work or whatever you happen to be doing. So look for that for this entire first season. By the time that wraps up, bam, we are just still talking about Pedro Pascal because we are going right into Mando season 3. Cannot wait for that. That's going to be a lot of fun too. But we've got I Am Legend coming out next week. And then to cap off Will Smith month, it'll end like a slap in the face. It's going to be Wild Wild West. We are going to force ourselves to watch this garbage and try to find something to say about it that isn't just, wow, that was terrible.
It's going to be difficult, but we will see if we can accomplish that task. Harrison, what do you got coming for the basement binge?
Yeah, I have lots of things coming. Before I tell you about that, though, I just have to say, if you are coming from the last of episodes, I'm so glad you're here. Stay here at Matt Goes to the Movies. It's great. If you are one of the listeners who are here and not listen to The Last of Us, and you're not watching the TV show like myself, because I don't subscribe to HBO Max, listen to the episode.
And also, Harrison's not good with scary things.
Yeah, that you didn't have to do me dirty, Rob. But nonetheless, you should listen to the episode. They are really, really good. In fact, I was shoveling the driveway with snow. It's been snowing here a lot in Utah. I was like, I need to get through this somehow. So I started to listen to that episode, and then I intentionally shoveled slower so I could listen to the whole thing because it was that good. So definitely go listen to that episode. But over on the Basement Binge, we are going the exact opposite direction of Scary Things, and we're talking about animated movies. you know, because maybe I'm just a child. Not maybe.
Unless you're reviewing Bambi, because that opens up pretty graphic.
Yeah, that's pretty awful.
Yeah, that might be my limit. We'll have to test. Yeah, animated.
Actually, I feel like there's a bunch of Disney movies that open up with somebody dying, like in a horrible, terrible way.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's why they're not on the list. They're all not there. So yeah, Animation Hall of Fave number 3 is happening at the Basement Binge, just a yearly thing at the beginning of the year where I go back and review animated movies that I love or try and find some new ones to love because I really enjoy the format of animation. That is starting out with Puss in Boots: The Last Wish, which is being released tomorrow. So if you're listening to this, it's probably already released. And Matt and Robin are going to be joining me for some other episodes, Pixar, Studio Ghibli, DreamWorks, some great films that I'm excited to review. And also getting excited for Creed coming out March. So kind of end of February, beginning of March, going to be doing a binge of the Creed series in anticipation for that. So some fun things happening, but I'm very excited for The Mandalorian, and I'm excited to continue to listen to your Last of Us episodes.
I'm drawing a blank. Were you doing the movie Coco?
I was not, but maybe I should.
That was a good one. That was one of my faves. I'm excited to hear those episodes and you know, be a part of a couple of them, and yeah, get, you know, together for Mando, because boy, that looks awesome.
Oh, it looks amazing.
I don't know, we've said it before, but there's just, for me, when Star Wars is good, there's nothing like it. Nope. Like nothing gives me that high, like good Star Wars. Yep. So we'll see if it continues.
I was going to say one last thing. If you are a great listener of Matt Goes to the Movies and you would like to come listen to The Basement Binge, I have a great episode for you. I reviewed I'm Legend previously, like a year ago, and did not like it. And at the end of that episode, promised to revisit it eventually and see if it could redeem itself. So if you want to join this redemption arc, go listen to that episode on The Basement Binge in anticipation for the next episode here at Matt Goes to the Movies. Because I don't know, maybe we're going to have a redemption arc of our own because Hancock couldn't do it good enough.
Right? Yeah. I mean, and way back then, we weren't even a thought in your mind.
No, not at all. I didn't even know you guys existed. Yeah, you like came in like Charlize Theron and had to introduce yourselves.
We threw you. We came in and threw you through a wall.
Exactly. And you know.
So, but listeners, thank you so much for joining us. You know, we continue to look forward to bringing you new movie reviews, giveaways, and so much more. And we will see you very soon at Matt Goes to the Movies.